You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Monday show, my co-host Rob Rang. It's Mock Draft Monday. Looking forward to breaking down your latest Seahawks drafts with a heavy emphasis on the offensive line this week. Built Bar is a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. Go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Though it remained unclear whether the team planned to bring him back in 2021, Mike Iupati made the decision for the Seahawks, announcing his retirement from the NFL. Really, Rob, he did it in the way you would expect from Mike Iupati. He kept it under wraps, and it was revealed through an interview with the spokesman review. I mean, nobody knew about it until this morning when the article dropped, and apparently this decision was made immediately after the Seahawks were ousted by the Rams in the wild card round.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It is very typical of Mike Iupati, kind of an understated way. The spokesman review, of course, in Spokane is basically right next to the University of Idaho, which is less than, half hour, 45 minute drive away. And so that doesn't surprise me that is some of the folks that he spoke to over this news. It doesn't surprise me that is when he made that decision to retire. Of course, by the end of the season, bodies are physically beaten up, especially if you are a veteran like Mike Iupati. You have been to the top of the mountain, so to speak. You've been an all-pro. You have been considered one of the better, more durable, more consistent interior offensive linemen in the NFL over the past decade or so. Seahawks fans right now might be kind of questioning that a little bit because they saw Iupati at the end of his career where he was not quite the dominant force that he was during his time in San Francisco and with the Arizona Cardinals as well. But in terms of size, in terms of just raw power, he was an absolutely phenomenal player. And it's funny because, you go back and you think about, this is a young man who grew up and played his college ball at the University of Idaho. I mean, how many Vandals out there are in the NFL? I mean, there's only so many who have wound up playing in the NFL. Of course, one of the more prominent Idaho Vandals, at least when it comes to Seahawks lore, would be the quarterback, John Freeze. And so you have had a couple, but not a huge number of them. And so, to me, this is kind of one of those stories that is, it's sad to see Mike Iupati leave because, frankly, at times I thought he was one of Seattle's best offensive linemen, and obviously the Seahawks are going to have to be able to replace him. And that's much easier said than done. But at the same time, it also allows us to very much narrow in on our scope on what the Seahawks are going to be looking to do in the future, because now they've only got a couple of guards and only one center that are currently under contract. So clearly our thoughts at the interior of the offensive line is going to be a big focus this offseason.
Yeah, it does provide a bit more clarity. But again, I think that this is what the Seahawks were probably anticipating, is that they were going to be moving on from Mike Iupati, whether he wanted to play another season or not. And again, this just gives that clarification. Well, we don't even have to consider whether we're going to re-sign him because he's walking away. And as he mentioned in his interview with the spokesman review, his body told him that it was time to walk away. And you look at the last couple of years, he's been dealing with nerve issues in his neck. And that's not something you want to mess around with, especially when you've gotten past 10 years. That was his goal. Can I get to 10 years? He ended up playing 11 seasons in the NFL. And as you mentioned, he was a fantastic player for the vast majority of those 11 seasons. 4 Pro Bowl selections. 2 times he was an All-Pro selection, including in 2012, the Super Bowl-bound 49ers. He was a first-team All-Pro selection. And he ended up playing in 4 NFC championship games during his career. So this particular player had a very successful career, 11 playoff games that he got to play in, and he spent his entire time in the NFC West, in the rugged, one of the most rugged divisions in football in the NFC West. And you mentioned coming from Idaho, Mark Schlereth is probably the most notable player that I can remember coming out of Idaho. There have been some pretty good linemen that ironically have come from the Vandals, but easily one of the best players ever to come out of Idaho and star in the NFL. And really, you look at his couple seasons in Seattle, Rob, I thought he gave the Seahawks two very solid seasons. He started 15 games in 2019. That was the most he'd started in 3 years because he had been dealing with injuries at the end of his time with the Cardinals, and he was a Pro Bowl alternate. This is a guy that when he was in the lineup again, injuries were taking a toll. When you're dealing with nerve issues in your neck, it's extremely difficult to be able to continue playing this game. And so he missed some games as a result. He missed both playoff games in 2019 from that injury. But when he was on the field, he played well for the most part. And really, I thought the end of that 2019 season going to the playoffs, the Seahawks had all those running back injuries. But I think losing him in those two postseason games was also critical to the team's inability to get the run game going. They really missed his big 330-plus pound frame in the middle, just bulldozing people. They didn't have a backup that could come in and do that. They had Jamarco Jones and a rookie in Phil Haynes at the time that had never played a snap on the offensive line. And so that was a huge loss for them up front. And I thought when he played last year in the 10 games, especially the middle of the season, we mentioned this while the games were happening, I thought that Mike Iupati played some of his best football between weeks 10 and week 12, 13 range before he got injured again and started dealing with his neck issues again. He had a 3 or 4 game span there where he was consistently getting really high grades on Pro Football Focus, and I thought he was dominant up front. He was playing some of his best ball and pass protection too. So I do think that this leaves a big void, but again, it's not as if the Seahawks weren't planning for this. I do think there was a very good chance they were going to move on regardless. But now the big question still is, who is going to fill that role? You mentioned the lack of bodies on the roster. You've got Jordan Simmons, Jamarco Jones, Phil Haynes didn't play any snaps last year. He's had a bunch of injuries. Can you really count on any of those guys to start? Do you go out and get a free agent with limited cap space? Do you use one of your limited draft picks to pick a guard? This is a pretty good class for offensive line, but certainly this is going to be one of the big priorities the Seahawks must address because they don't have Mike Iupati to turn to as a last resort like they did bringing him back for another season last year.
Well, that's the thing is I almost wonder if he might not be a player that you might be able to coax back if you feel really good about the you know your off season and you feel like you've built the team back up. And if nothing else, then maybe as kind of a player coach, I think that might be something that Seattle might consider just given given Iupati's experience and the respect that he has in that locker room and in that coaching staff. But let's just assume for a moment that you Mike Iupati does, you know, kind of just retire and walk off into the sunset as he very much deserves. You know, if you're looking at this, who Seattle might try to replace him with, you know, I've argued for a while now that I think that Jamarco Jones might make some sense just because I like his frame inside as a guard. At the same time, you know, he's 6'4", 310 pounds. And as you mentioned before with Mike Iupati, we're talking about all of 6'5", all of 330 pounds with very long arms, almost 35-inch arms. He had the frame to be able to slide outside and play that offensive tackle position just because he was as long as he is. With Jamarco Jones, he's a little bit more of a compact-framed kind of a guy. And I've always argued that that makes him a little bit better suited maybe to playing guard, but not necessarily guard in the way that Seattle has used their offensive line in the past. And as you mentioned a moment ago, you know, Mike Iupati was playing really good ball for the Seahawks at times over the last couple of years. You know, with that size, obviously, you're usually going to be very well known as a run blocker, and he could do that. Jordan Simmons and Phil Haynes, they have the similar frames to be able to kind of plug into that role. You know, with Jamarco Jones, he has the footwork that I think would make him a better pass protector inside, but he is certainly not the run blocker that Iupati is, or frankly, you know, some of those other guys that I just mentioned with Haynes and Simmons. So to me, that's really going to be fascinating, is to see what are the Seahawks looking to do here with their offense. You know, Shane Waldron coming in as new offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. You know, there are going to be some changes. And so are they going to be looking for quicker, more athletic offensive linemen? That might suggest that it's Jamarco Jones. If not, then you are putting an awful lot of faith in guys like Simmons and in Haynes who have struggled with durability. Or, as you mentioned, you're going to have to kind of look at investing a draft pick or free agent dollars. And this is not a team that feels like it has much space to be able to do precisely that. So it might be up to Phil Cole Haynes and Jordan Simmons to step up to the plate now that Mike Chiappotti has left.
Yeah, that's going to be the million-dollar question when you talk about the scheme changes with Shane Waldron as the new coordinator. We don't know what to expect there. If it's going to be more of a Ram-style running game with wide zone, almost those stretch runs, you're going to want more athletic guards that are able to move laterally. And Jamarco Jones might be an excellent fit there rather than getting another 330-plus pound mauler in the middle. If they're going to stick with status quo, though, then they're going to have to go out and find another big body. They've got some guys in the roster, but again, durability is the big question when you're talking Jordan Simmons and Phil Haynes. And so that's going to be a big priority that John Schneider in the front office for the Seahawks, they've got to get that figured out in free agency and or the draft and try to find an upgrade at that position if they can. When we come back in the second quarter, it's Mock Draft Monday. We're going to take a look at several listener submissions. Had a couple of requirements that you had to meet this week. Most specifically, you needed to draft a guard and a center as part of your draft class. It's all about the offensive line on this episode this week. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are you looking for a way to boost your workout game? Are you seeking a delicious protein bar without the sugar and carbs? Enter in the Built Bar, 18 delicious flavors, including nut and non-nut flavors. Some of my favorites, cookies and cream, carrot cake, German chocolate, peanut butter, salted caramel, coconut, peanut butter brownie, you name it, they all are delicious. All of the bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft and easy to chew, and it's good for the health conscious guy. You can lose or maintain weight while indulging in a delicious treat. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. In my case, gluten-free. It's great for a keto diet as well. Visit BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your first order. Again, the promo code LOCKEDON at BuiltBar.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Monday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. We're covering everything you need to know about the Seahawks, but what about the rest of sports? Now the Locked On Podcast Network has you covered there as well with Locked On Today. It's hosted by the great Peter Bukowski, and it's all the sports news you need every morning in under 20 minutes. Subscribe to the Locked On Today podcast wherever you get podcasts. It's Mock Draft Monday, one of our favorite shows of the week. As we've been doing for the last couple of Mondays, we dished out a few requirements for this week's mock drafts. We've had one where you had to pick a quarterback. We've had one where you couldn't make any trades. This week, two requirements. Everyone had to pick a left guard and a center, and you had to do so with a maximum of 6 draft picks. So those of you that love to make a million trade downs so you can turn 4 picks into 90 of them, you did not have the flexibility to do that this week. So, Rob, let's get to it. Our first one here from Riley Papps. It's a 6-player draft class. This one was done on the Pro Football Network mock draft simulator. Again, I'm partial to that simulator. To me, it's the best one overall in the business. A 6-player class headlined at pick 67 by Quinn Miners out of Wisconsin, Whitewater. Then at pick 130, Aaron Banks out of Notre Dame, a guard. Benjamin St. Juice, the corner out of Minnesota at 148. Frank Darby, the receiver from Arizona State at pick 168. And then a couple picks in the 200s at 209. Kylan Granson out of SMU, the tight end. And then Brian Mills, a corner out of North Carolina Central. Overall, a pretty solid mock draft, Rob. And there's several players on here that we've had a chance to look at. And there's a few names that we haven't had a chance to look at. But this draft covers the secondary and the offensive line. It seems like that's the big priority here, while also adding a couple more targets for Russell Wilson in the passing game.
Yeah, I think that this first mock draft makes a lot of sense in that I think it's relatively realistic. You know, I mean, you have the Seahawks, of course, right now have 4 draft picks. Expanding to 6 doesn't seem to be too much out of the question. With their first selection still being at number 67 overall, you're still very much well into day 2 without completely dropping out. You know, there's going to be a lot of people out there who are just going to completely trade out of day 2 and then acquire 10 or 12 draft picks. But that's not the way the NFL teams are really going to operate, even one them as the success on day three that Seattle does. I think that you're starting off here with Quinn Meinerz and Aaron Banks is two of the more physical offensive linemen in this draft class. You know, Quinn Meinerz is a small school player, of course, from Wisconsin Whitewater, but he kind of helped erase any of those concerns about his level of competition with a really impressive performance at the Senior Bowl. Just his physicality, his quickness, his nastiness. He is one of those guys that you know, for those people who don't like to watch the offensive line, guys who are just brawlers like Miners are the kind of guys that are going to get you excited. They may want to start paying some attention at that position. Aaron Banks is an interesting one from Notre Dame too. I mean, we were talking about the big brawlers, the 6'5", 330 pounders. I mean, that's Aaron Banks too in a nutshell right there. I mean, he is a huge part of Notre Dame's success and actually in qualifying for the playoffs in college football this year. So those two players, I think, fit in with Seattle very well. I'm not so sure that it's going to be Notre Dame is the way that they go, just because Seattle's track record, Notre Dame players, has been a little bit up and down. Quinn Meinerz is a small school player. Again, that's not been something that Seattle has focused on in the past. But in terms of the style of the offensive lineman to start off this draft, I think they very much fit in with the Seahawks style.
And Aaron Banks, I think when you're looking at the guard position specifically, again, this will be very telling. We should have an idea when free agency gets going what the Seahawks want to do with their offensive line. But if they're going to be going to more of a wide zone stretch-oriented run game, Aaron Banks, to me, is not the guard that you target, because this is not a guy that's fleet of foot, even by offensive line standards, not super mobile. He'll maul you. He can drive people back. The vertical run game, he's going to be a really good fit. But I question where he's going to fit in on an offense. He's going to be running a lot of zone, especially outside zone, like what the Rams do. If that's the style run game we're going to see the Seahawks now implementing, I'm not sure that Aaron Banks fits. Quinn Meinerz, on the other hand, I see enough athleticism from him on the tape, looking at how he performed in the Senior Bowl, and the fact he could play center or guard. I think at the center position, it's not as big of a deal if maybe his lateral quickness isn't near the top of his class and his position group. And so I can definitely see Miners, if the Seahawks are willing to draft a small school lineman. That has not been something they have done under John Schneider. The two picks on here that I really like are the next two after those offensive line. Not that I don't like the lineman picks, but Benjamin St. Juste is one of my favorite corners in this draft class. 6'3", around 200 pounds, long arm. So this is your prototypical Pete Carroll corner. Now, DJ Reed maybe changes a little bit how the Seahawks are going to evaluate corners moving forward, but I still think that's the kind of player that Pete Carroll is going to prefer to have on the outside. This guy is a physical player. He'll get up in receiver's face at the point of attack. He'll come up and make hits in the run game. He showed he's got better ball skills than his stats in college advertised in the Senior Bowl. Sticky coverage. He'll get his hands out there. Seems like this is a guy that still has a lot of room to grow in the secondary, so I really like his fit in Seattle's scheme. And then Frank Darby at 168. He is a player that I'd be concerned maybe his stock is going up a little bit too much for the Seahawks to be able to get him. But again, this is a very deep receiver class. So a player like Darby, who doesn't have the greatest college production, he could still be a guy that slides into day three that the Seahawks could bring in. What I like most about him, he not only has big play threat capabilities, but this is a guy that got a lot of yards after the catch in college at Arizona State. And you and I both know, Rob, the Seahawks absolutely need a receiver behind Metcalf and Lockett that can do that, that you can just get the football to him quick and then he can create yardage. That is a major strength for Frank Darby.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I like about Riley Papp's mock here is that besides just the individual players themselves, and you're absolutely right, Corbin, I mean, that is finding another set of hands to be that third pass catcher in Seattle's offense is absolutely critical. So I like that, you know, that Riley here went with a wide receiver or the tight end with two different cornerbacks. I mean, this is truly paying attention to Seattle's current roster and where they have some holes at this point. You know, I think that the cornerback is almost surely going to be one of Seattle's selections, unless, of course, that the team makes some big time big-time moves in free agency, whether retaining some of their own players or going out and getting some others. So, but with Benjamin St. Juste, you know, at pick 148, and then Brian Mills, 100 picks later, the small school corner from North Carolina Central, I had an opportunity to evaluate him. And, you know, again, Seattle has generally focused away from the small school players. But once you get invited to the Senior Bowl, Ike Miner's their first selection in this projection, excuse me, then I think that you kind of ease some of those concerns. And Brian Mills has those 32-inch arms that you're looking for. He has experience playing on the outside as well as the inside. His season did play on this past year, unlike many of the other small school players out there. So so you have a little bit of a tape on him. You see a guy that does have speed, that does have ball hawking ability. At the same time, when he did struggle at the lower level, it was against size. And you think about some of the wide receivers that Seattle is going to be hoping to face in the NFC West division. You do have some receivers who have elite straight line speed, and they have enough size. And so I think that he is correctly placed here as a late round selection, but one who has the upside that the Seahawks are always looking for.
And that's what I like about pick 209. We're talking upside. Seattle's only got three tight ends under contract, and I know for a fact that they are looking at some big-name tight ends on the trade market as well as free agency. That is a position they absolutely want to address. But if they were going to go the draft route, Kylan Granson, around 242 pounds, he has played some in the backfield. He's that interchangeable tight end that can move around a little bit. You can play him fullback. You can play him as a wing in the slot. He's played some inline tight end. I don't think that's a big strength for him. He's on the lighter side, but he certainly surprised me on film with how well he blocked, at least at the college level. And so maybe there's some upside in that area of his game too. But he set a SMU record for touchdown receptions by a tight end a few years ago. This guy's got good, not great athleticism, but he's a really solid route runner with soft hands. And so maybe that's the kind of player that Shane Waldron looks at and says, I see enough on film from him as a blocker. I know he can move around. He can catch the football. This kid makes a lot of sense late in day three to bring in, and we can develop him behind Colby Parkinson and Will Disley. Maybe he can play some snaps for you early on. So overall, a pretty good mock draft. Let's get to our next one here from Cody Reddinghouse. There's a few repeats on this one, but also a few names we have not discussed yet. At pick 76, there was one big trade by Cody. Moved down to 76 to get Kenneth Gainwell, the running back out of Memphis. And then at pick 82, Benjamin St. Juste. There goes that man again, the corner out of Minnesota. And then at 124, Trey Smith, the guard out of Tennessee. A few picks later, hitting the offensive line again with Josh Myers, the center out of Ohio State. 168, Darius Stills at defensive tackle, West Virginia product. And then at 208, a corner out of Washington, Keith Taylor, a player that I think his stock has risen enough after the Senior Bowl. I'd be surprised if he's still available at that point. But maybe this is a draft that's got a lot of bodies at the corner position. He wasn't overly productive with the Huskies. Maybe he's a player that ends up slipping through the cracks a little bit. A couple picks that I really like on this one in particular, Rob. Trey Smith out of Tennessee. Again, this goes back to the idea if the Seahawks are still going to want that big-bodied guard that can play that left guard spot. They still want a 325, 330-pound guy. Trey Smith fits the bill. This is a big, big boy that I think happens to have a little bit more athletic upside than the player from the last mock draft, which was Aaron Banks. And so I could see Trey Smith being a player that maybe he meshes with both what Shane Waldron wants to do and what Mike Solari wants to do, a bigger body guy that still has enough lateral mobility that you can run some of that outside zone and he can be successful. If you can get him at 124, to me, that's a steal.
Yeah, it very much could be a steal. I mean, you're talking about an all SEC player, I mean, basically since the moment they stepped onto the field in Knoxville. You know, and of course, with the Seahawks just drafting Daryl Taylor, they are going to have some insight on Trey Smith that very few others would have. And I mentioned that because I think this particular year, that is important. I could see, teams very much relying on their first-year players, or their second-year players, I guess Daryl Taylor would be considered at this point. But they're rookies who, from a year ago, are still going to know some of these players. And, you know, of course, that happens all the time. you know, but I think, again, with this year, with the limited availability for scouts to get onto campus, the you know, the fact that there was only 10 representatives of each of the NFL teams that were allowed to go to the Senior Bowl itself, the fact that there's only going to be a handful of league representatives for each team, they're allowed to go to the combine, and then teams are going to have to do a little bit more due diligence and really trying to evaluate the person. And I think with Trey Smith, that's important because the medical questions are really going to dog him. I mean, this is a guy who, as I mentioned before, was an absolutely spectacular player, but he was found to have blood clots in his lungs, and that basically forced him to at times only play during the games, but not practice at all during the week. And when you are a team that only has 4 draft picks, I don't know that you can take that type of a medical gamble. I really like Trey Smith. I think he would be a terrific fit for the Seahawks. And I hope that the Seahawks and every other NFL team out there gets a clean medical grade on Trey Smith, because I really think he's a terrific player and a good human being as well. Was lauded by Tennessee staff for his work ethic, his commitment. But at the same time, again, those would be the concerns I have about him. I really like the selection of Josh Myers, the center, as well as Darius Stills and Keith Taylor. Day 3 for Cody Rettenhouse's mock draft here. Day 3, the Seahawks would be absolutely ecstatic. But at the same time, I have some questions about whether or not any of those players are likely to be available at that point. And that is more of a comment on the, you know, whoever did the grading service for that particular website rather than Cody. I think he did a terrific job of basically checking the boxes of all the different needs that the Seahawks have. And before I let you go and talk and whatever your thoughts are, really quickly, Kenneth Gainwell, the running back that he has Seattle selecting 76th overall from Memphis. I mean, this is an intriguing guy. This is a guy who is a little bit like another Senior Bowl star, Demetric Felton from UCLA, in that he's more in that 5'10", 190-pound range. This is not your traditional Seahawks Pete Carroll running back. This is a guy who can line up as a slot receiver and do some dynamic things. He can be that speed running back. To me, he's an interesting guy, but for him to be your very first selection would very much surprise me at this point.
Yeah, he's not at the top of the board for me at the running back position. I think there's a lot of potential with Kenneth Gainwell. I look at the scheme fit. He's a player that the Seahawks offense is going to be featuring running backs more in the passing game, and they want to use him like they were hoping to use CJ Prosize, where he moves around in the slot and different stuff like that. Then certainly Gainwell could be a player they look at. I'm with you. I think pick 76 is a bit too rich for me. There are a number of other running backs in this class that I look at that I think from a stylistic standpoint, a build standpoint, would be better fits for what the Seahawks like to have in the backfield. And they're supposed to be going back to running the football. Maybe Gainwell ends up being that guy. Maybe they buck some trends, but this has just not been the typical type of player they have gone after. If they viewed him as a receiver, that's one thing. But I think most teams are looking at him being a running back at the next level, given the fact that he's around 5'11", 191 pounds. He's got enough frame there maybe to add a little bit more weight and not lose much speed as a result. But really the home run hitting ability is what makes him stand out the most. Overall, though, I think this is a pretty solid mock draft. Again, I'm with you. There's a number of players here. I'll be surprised if they're still available. But this is the season. If there's ever going to be guys really dropping further than you ever anticipated, it's this year because of how weird the scouting situation is and not having a combine. There are going to be guys more than usual that are going to fall through the cracks. So maybe the Seahawks will have a chance at some of these guys at later picks than anticipated. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to continue our Mock Draft Monday. A couple more mock drafts coming from you, our listeners. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bet online is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football might be over, but the NBA, college basketball, and the NHL are in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV. Real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit using the code LOCKEDON. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Monday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Join the Draft Network's Trevor Sikma and Ben Solak every weekday on Locked On NFL Draft Every Monday through Friday, Trevor and Ben break down everything you need to know about the NFL draft, upcoming prospects, and more through the draft scouting lens. With mock drafts every Monday, get an early look at which top prospects may be available for your team over at Locked On NFL Draft. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Continuing our Mock Draft Monday festivities, again, here are the requirements. You had to have a maximum of 6 picks, no more than that. You couldn't go on a trading spree to add a million draft picks for the Seahawks, and you had to pick at least one guard and one center. So let's move on to our next one here, NSL underscore Seahawks. And I'm going to be honest, Rob, at least for the first couple picks, this might be my favorite mock draft that we had in today's submissions, because at pick number 70, I doubt he's there, but man, I hope he is. Creed Humphrey, one of my favorite prospects in this entire draft class. The big fella out of Oklahoma. I like to call him a rock'em sock'em robot because he just goes out there and just beats up his opponents each week. You want to talk about a guy that looks like a Seahawks-style center, it's Creed Humphrey.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it does. There's a couple of centers in this draft class who I think scream Seahawks, and Creed Humphrey, is very much one of them. I kind of misspoke there. Trey Hill from George is another one that we have not yet talked about, but I think that our savvy Seahawks scouts out there might be taking a peek at him, as well as some of the other players that we have talked about, like a Landon Dickerson from Alabama, for example. But with Creed Humphrey, we're talking about a guy who, again, kind of like Trey Smith we talked about from the University of Tennessee, Creed Humphrey has been a standout at a program that has produced back-to-back number one overall selections here in recent years, and Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. Oklahoma is, of course, one of the elite programs in all of college football. Creed Humphrey, he has the experience in an up-tempo, pass-happy offense. He also has incredible power. I mean, this is a guy who was wrestling competitively at like 5 or 6 years old, and was an absolutely dominant wrestler. And you see that in the way that he plays football. I like that you said the rock'em sock'em, because he does fire off a punch on guys that would make Mike Tyson proud. I mean, he just has the initial power and then the balance to kind of go along with that. He is not the most fleet of foot guy. I wish that he was a touch quicker in that regard, but at the same time, I really like his power, his physicality. And whenever we're talking about interior offensive linemen for the Seahawks, of course, you have to figure out a way that you're going to stop Aaron Donald. And to me, one of the things that the Seahawks have tried to do, at times been very successful, other times have struggled, is just to maul Aaron Donald and the rest of the Rams defensive front with just sheer size and physicality. Humphrey has that size. He certainly has that power as well.
And pick 84 on NSL Seahawks draft is another big body. This guy, I like to call him the Mountain. If you're a Game of Thrones fan, he is George's version of the Mountain. And that is Ben Cleveland, 6'6", around 340 pounds. This is a big, big dude. And he loves to maul people off the line of scrimmage, too. He just has a propensity. This is the thing I noticed watching Georgia film. And I was instantly drawn to this guy because I can't tell you how many times it seems like defenders just gravitated to his pancakes. Like, he was the kind of chef that cooked 2 pancakes in 1 skillet, and he did it all the time. And he's just the kind of guy that typically the Seahawks have wanted to have at the guard position. And yeah, there's some scheme fit issues potentially here. Again, we have to go back to whether they're going to run more wide zone. How's that impact the type of players they want? But based on the type of guards the Seahawks have deployed the last 3 years, Ben Cleveland looks like the ideal prospect you can get end of day 2, early day 3. If you pitted him with Creed Humphrey up there, I don't care if you want to run more wide outside zone. If I'm Shane Waldron, I'm saying with those guys up front and Damian Lewis, we're going to just run power, man. We're just going to run it down your throat. And why not? They've got the running backs to be able to do it.
They do. And that's the thing. Ben Cleveland is one of my favorite players in this draft class. I mean, he is a guy that I think would fit in beautifully in Seattle, at least in the way that Seattle has chosen to run the ball here over these last couple of years. Now, again, if there is a huge difference in scheme and what they're going to ask these offensive linemen to do, then perhaps Cleveland is not going to be the greatest fit because he is not fleet of foot. But for a guy who, as you mentioned, 6'6", 335 340 pounds. You probably, for our listeners, you're probably imagining what that might look like. You might be imagining a little bit of flab in the middle because he's 340 pounds. I would ask you to do a quick Google search or Bing search if that's your preference.
He's the mountain. I mean, he's ripped for a lineman of that size.
He is. I mean, he might have a six pack. I mean, this guy is absolutely unbelievable with his frame for that size and just his conditioning. And of course, as we talked about before with Creed Humphrey in Oklahoma, you know, Georgia runs the ball and plays pro style offense as well as just about any team in the entire country. You know, and so it's almost like Stanford out here in the Pac-12 with the way that they have kind of built up their offensive lines, or maybe even the Oregon Ducks here in recent years. So if you are not a college football fan who has watched a lot of Georgia Bulldogs, I assure you the Seahawks have, because they are playing it exactly the way that Seattle looks. That's, I mentioned the Georgia center, Trey Hill, the guard, Ben Cleveland. It's a terrific fit. And I gushed about the tackle, Isaiah Wilson, a year ago, who wound up being a late selection of the Tennessee Titans in the first round. You know, so to me, these are the types of teams that really produce consistent, reliable, you know, and very, very good offensive linemen year in and year out. And so, yeah, I have to agree with you. NSL Seahawks, in terms of at least the very first two selections, the center out of Oklahoma, Creed Humphrey, the guard out of Georgia, Ben Cleve. I think that both of them would be slight surprises to still be available at this point in the draft. But at the same time, there's so much talent this year at some very difficult to find positions that it could work out in Seattle's favor, have a couple of real big, tough physical offensive linemen fall into their lap.
Looking at the rest of this mock, at pick 128, the Seahawks get their first corner of this draft class, Kerry Vincent Jr. from LSU. 168, Chauncey Golston from Iowa, defensive end. 213, Frank Darby, there goes that character again, from Arizona State, coming in the seventh round. And then 229, Taquan Graham, defensive lineman out of Texas. I have already mentioned how much I like Frank Darby on this podcast. He is a receiver that, again, I think he checks off a number of boxes the Seahawks look for. He's got big play ability downfield, averaged over 20 yards per reception in 2019. So he's an explosive downfield guy. He's a very savvy route runner. He's tough in the middle of the field, can create yardage after the catch. Another name here that's kind of intriguing to me is Chauncey Golston, just for the fact that his former college teammate and high school teammate, Cedric Lattimore, has a chance maybe to play some more snaps for the Seahawks in the interior defensive line next season. Golston is a player that isn't going to give you a ton as a pass rusher. He's around 275 pounds, 6'5", 275, long arms. He had 12 sacks in 4 years at Iowa. So he wasn't a terrible pass rusher, but that's not a strength in his game. What he is really good at is setting the edge as a run defender. He looks to me like a player with his size, you could add some more weight to his frame. You get him up to around 280, 285 pounds. Chauncey Golston could be a very sound rotational base defensive end for the Seahawks. And I think you get him at 168. That's a pretty good value selection.
I agree. And we talked about this before with you know, what Daryl Taylor might be able to provide the Seahawks with some intel on Trey Smith and other Tennessee Volunteers. Same thing as you just mentioned with Cedric Lattimore, who we were fortunate enough to interview here just a week or so ago. He might be able to provide the Seahawks with plenty of intel on Chauncey Golston, who I think that the way you described him, Corbin, was perfect. I mean, he is kind of that classic base end. He is not going to be an elite pass rusher, but at the same time, if you're looking at, you know, the 168th selection, then you are not likely to find a world-beating pass rusher at 270 pounds. But he is a pro-ready guy, as are most players that come out of Iowa. The other thing I like about this draft, this particular mock draft, is with the selection of the corner, Kerry Vincent, at pick 128. Kerry Vincent was one of those players who opted out on the season. And so I think that is, unfortunately for Kerry Vincent, is going to push him down the board a little bit. At the same time, this is a terrific athlete. There's no question about that. He would offer Seattle the similar kind of straight line speed as what the club may not have returning with Shaquille Griffin. I mean, the Seahawks have lots of long, tall guys. They don't necessarily have a lot of guys who can absolutely fly, and Kerry Vincent can do that. I expect him to run in the low 4.4s, and he backs that up on tape, and he's a playmaker as well. So he's an interesting interesting guy who I think could actually be available at the 128th overall spot. And then finally, the very last selection, Taequann Graham, a defensive tackle from Texas. Now, he played a little bit of inside, a little bit of outside, kind of like a Chauncey Golston. Doesn't have the statistics that overwhelm you, but my goodness, he looks the part, kind of like Ben Cleveland. You know, he's 6'4", 290 pounds, got the really long arms, really flashed a little bit at the Senior Bowl. And so to me, again, going back to the how the Seattle has had some success with the late round and undrafted free agent, the defensive line, that might be the kind of selection you could see Seattle use their very last picks on some of those defensive linemen, hoping they can catch lightning in a bottle.
Let's go to our last draft here. This one coming from Theo Coney, and another one very aggressive getting offensive linemen right off the bat at pick 56. No trade down from the original second round selection. And if this player is available, I can understand why you wouldn't be trading down. You go get Landon Dickerson out of Alabama. We'll talk about him here in a moment. At pick 131, David Moore out of Grambling State, a big mauling guard. 170, Chris Rumpf, the edge rusher out of Duke. 209, Alaric Jackson, the tackle out of Iowa, and then two consecutive picks, 211 and 212, Marlon Williams out of UCF and Felipe Franks out of Arkansas, getting a quarterback at the end of the draft. Maybe the Seahawks will do that, given the Russell Wilson situation. Geno Smith is not under contract as of right now for the 2021 season. Let's talk about that first pick, though, Landon Dickerson. We were mentioning Creed Humphrey and his size. Well, Landon Dickerson, who played his first 3 years at Florida State before going to Alabama, 6'6", 326 pounds. Another guy that's an enforcer at the point of attack, great body strength, and a very savvy player, very intelligent player. Another one that's not a great athlete, doesn't have great lateral movement. He is going to get out of his stance quick, though, and he's going to bully people. So, again, another player that looks like a Seahawks-style center that really fits the rugged NFC West well.
He does. To me, Landon Dickerson is one of those guys that we're going to someday talk about as either being a resume writer or a resume wrecker, because he is an all-pro waiting to happen. There's very few centers or interior offensive linemen. I'll throw guards out there as well. I mean, I'm talking like the Steve Hutchinson types that you watch them and you're just like, oh my goodness, interior offensive linemen should not impact the game the way that Landon Dickerson can. At the same time, he struggled with durability throughout his entire career, including his final season at Alabama. And so that is the concern. Is that can he stay healthy? And for a team like the Seahawks, again, you only have four draft picks. That is one heck of a roll of the dice. Now, again, I think this player is absolutely fantastic. I think that a center that warrants a first-round selection are damn rare. But this guy absolutely warrants that. There is no question in my mind that he is the most physically gifted interior offensive lineman in this draft class. At the same time, I'm not so sure that he's going to go in the first round. He may not even go at number 56 overall when teams really start doing the medical on him. But my goodness, what a player. You know, it takes something to go from Florida State, who when he signed with Florida State, the Seminoles were no joke back in the day. It's only been a couple of years that they've really fallen off the map. But then to make that transfer, talk about competitiveness and confidence in your ability, to make the transfer as a graduate transfer, by the way, to make that transfer to Alabama and to seize that role for, you know, the national title contending team year in and year out. Joe Moore, award-winning offensive line, is the best offensive line in college football. And then to win the Remington Trophy this year as the best center in college football, even though he was hurt, it just kind of speaks to what a talent he is. He is incredibly powerful. You mentioned his size. I mean, he's just massive, and he moves really well for a man of that size. I don't care if he's playing center, guard, anywhere. As long as he's on the field for you, then I think the Seahawks would be absolutely ecstatic to be able to bring Landon Dickerson onto the field for me. It's funny because he is kind of physically the opposite of the next selection, David Moore.
I got to say this about David Moore at 131. The Seahawks already have one, currently not on the roster because he's going to be a free agent, but David Moore is 5'10", 320 pounds. You want to talk about a guy that's built like a block. And the thing that's surprising about him, though, is he's fairly agile for having that build, being short and really stocky. He kind of reminds me of an offensive line version of Puna Ford. He gets after you. He's fairly light on his feet. And this is the ironic thing for me. You know, we talk about Russell Wilson, the issues being a shorter quarterback. You know, he's going to win the leverage battle up front, David Moore, as being 5'10". Maybe that's an advantage for Russell Wilson, too. You don't have a 6'6" guy like Cleveland you got to try to look past. You could actually maybe see over a guy like David Moore playing left guard for you.
Exactly. And that's the thing is that, you know, again, I always come back to who are you actually competing against? And if you're going to go up against a guy like Aaron Donald, who doesn't have elite, you know, prototypical size himself, then you might be able to get away with a guy like David Moore. And talk about strength. I mean, this guy, again, this is, he's kind of the opposite again of Landon Dickerson, or we talked about Ben Cleveland before, you know, these offensive linemen that might have six packs. I mean, David Moore has that. He is a square build, but wait till you see the guy's arms. I mean, this is the guy who just, it has incredible power. And the only reason that he wound up playing at Grambling State rather than one of those other big time programs in the South is just the height. And, you know, Seattle knows better than most that the height can be one of the most overrated, measurables when it comes to evaluating college football players. You know, one of the other things that switching past David Moore to some of the other players on this draft, which I think is another very, very good one. Chris Rump, the edge rusher from Duke, and Eric Jackson, the big tackle from Iowa. For one, I don't know what Pro Football Network is seeing. I don't know why that Jackson is rated as low as he is on their board. But I remain convinced that he is at least a top 100 selection. But still, I just like the idea of Seattle trying to draft a good young offensive tackle and then be able to develop them. So if they are able to do so, then I think that makes a lot of sense. We've talked so much before about Iowa and just what an incredible program that Kirk Ferentz runs there, and how so many times that some of the guys that are drafted in later rounds out of Iowa wind up being very quality NFL producers. I think that Jackson's going to do the exact same thing. Chris Rumpf is an interesting guy. He's a guy that physically speaking kind of reminds me a little bit of Benson Mayoa, in that he is more that 6'3", 235, 240-pound range. And can you get that extra 15 to 20 pounds on him? That, to me, is one of the questions about him. But he has great straight-line burst right off the line to be able to get to cross the face of the tackle and be able to get upfield. He can transition and be able to turn the corner and be able to close. He's an interesting guy. He's a guy that surprised some people by coming out a year early out of Duke. He wasn't the most, his statistics look good, but he disappeared at times at games. But there are some traits there. And so it's going to be interesting to see the way that Seattle looks at their young defensive ends, because that's the role that I think that Rumpf is going to play, not so much as a strong side linebacker. I just don't see the power at the point of attack just yet.
The other pick I want to talk about from this draft, real quick, at 211. Marlon Williams, the receiver out of UCF. We talked about the need for a guy that can create after the catch and can play slot and the outside. Marlon Williams is 6', 222 pounds. So he is a thickly built receiver that does have the ability to create after the catch. He can break tackles. He's a very powerful receiver that has not dropped very many passes at the college level. And his production last season, his last year for the Knights, he had 71 receptions for over 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns in just 8 games. This is a guy, the light switch really came on for him this season at UCF. I still look at him as a player that's got a lot of room to develop as a route runner. He hasn't played a ton of games at the collegiate level. He was just starting to come into his own in 2019, the first year that he really was getting a lot of snaps at UCF. But you could see what kind of playmaker that he is this past season, showing off his ball skills, his ability to take the football and create with it in its hands. He's got the ability to take down catches in traffic downfield. I'm curious to see what his pro day numbers look like, because this could be a guy, especially this year without the combine, that if he has a very strong pro day performance, he might rocket up draft board, because you can see the physical traits and you can see the athleticism, ball skills, you name it. The package is there. Just seems like he's a little bit of a unpolished player going into this draft that really just started putting everything together last season.
Yeah, it's a little bit ironic that in this mock draft by Theo Koney, he drafts a player named David Moore. And then we were talking about the wide receiver for the Seahawks, David Moore. And that's who Marlon Williams kind of reminds me of a little bit. He's unpolished, much bigger than you would expect. 6 foot, as you mentioned, 6 foot, 220 pounds. And so he is beastly after the catch. He can run through those arm tackles. And so I agree with you, Corbin. I think it's going to really be interesting to see what exactly he runs and how he works out, because this is another terrific wide receiver class. I feel very confident. Now, whether the Seahawks can find one or not, I don't know. But I feel very confident that we are going to wind up seeing some late or middle and late round selections, maybe even some undrafted free agents this year at the wide receiver position that wind up being quality NFL players. Marlon Williams, it seems like, has that type of upside. So he is an intriguing one. Another one, the Seahawks have had some success in the late rounds with some of their wide receivers, more than they've had, say, the fourth or middle rounds, for example. And so Marlon Williams is one of the ones that intrigues me. And then finally, the quarterback, Felipe Franks. You know, before Kyle Trask wound up becoming a superstar at Florida, Felipe Franks was the starter there. He winds up transferring to Arkansas. And the numbers are reasonable, but what is exciting about him is just the size and arm strength combination. I don't know that this is the quarterback that you want to draft behind Russell Wilson, because he is, you know, if you're trying to push Russell Wilson a little bit, Felipe Franks is not the guy that's going to push him, because he is very, very raw. At the same time, he can make very rare throws. And so there is legitimate talent here. If you're looking for a guy to develop, then Felipe Franks has that type of upside. This isn't one of those throwaway picks where you're just drafting a guy because, oh, you know, you want to make sure that you have somebody who can kind of, you know, whistle or talk in Russell Wilson's ear a little bit. This is a guy who has that starting potential. We're just talking a year or two or three down the road.
Make sure to follow me on Twitter, Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast, by visiting our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Make sure to leave us a review. Coming up on tomorrow's Tuesday show, Throwback Tuesday, we're going to be looking back at the 2017 draft class. There's a chance after this offseason the Seahawks won't have any players on the roster from that draft class. Pretty crazy to think about that. Plus, we'll take a look at the latest on the Russell Wilson front as far as his future with the Seahawks moving into 2021. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.